The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
It's the best of Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I am your guest host, Cliff D. Andrews, and Dr. Steve is out for the week, so I'm just going to be here taking his place and bringing you some of the best clips I could find for your entertainment purposes. This is a show for people who would never listen to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question that you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, or if you just can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347-POOHEAD. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine and Dr. Scott WM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy, or go to our new merch store at cafepress.com/weirdmedicine. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything you hear with a grain of salt and don't act on anything you hear on this show without talking it over with your doctor, nurse, practitioner, physician, assistant, pharmacist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever the hell. Let's get it going, right? So for today, I picked out some clips about blood pressure, going vegan, penis pills, and whatever the hell a plugged liver is.
You're listening to Weird Medicine.
Hey, Dr. Steve, it's Nick from Kentucky. I was diagnosed with low testosterone 3 or 4 years ago, probably. Low vitamin D, low B12, and I've been on injections, I've been on Androgel, I've been on Testem gel. Nothing seems to work. They had sent me to an endocrinologist, but they actually ended up firing the one that we had here local. So they have put me to a lady they have filling in for an endocrinologist, and she went down a checklist for chronic fatigue because they can't figure out why I'm so tired all the time. And she went through everything on the list, everything checked out. I don't know how many three-letter codes that they check my blood work for, but my question is, at the end, she came up with the fact that metoprolol, if I'm saying that right, in my urine were too high, but they couldn't test it because of my metoprolol blood pressure medicine. It was increasing those, and they wanted me to go off of it, but my family doctor won't approve that. Do you have any suggestions on what I could do or how I could fix that? Thanks.
Bye. Yeah. Okay. So this is more, okay. What he's talking about is urine metanephrines. and that's a breakdown of epinephrine. And he's right. They what they're looking for are things like pheochromocytoma. And so don't worry about what all that is, because this is not really an issue of us diagnosing what his problem is. It's an issue of him communicating with his primary care physician.
Feeling like shit.
And first off, he's complaining of fatigue. They're saying, well, your metanephrines might be elevated, but we can't check that until you come off your metoprolol.
Yes.
Metoprolol, my friend, is a beta blocker. That's one of its main side effects is fatigue.
Right. It's a blood pressure medication.
So think medications.
Right.
So I would petition the physician to consider changing you to something else, because there's all kinds of other blood pressure medications. If he or she won't do it, have the endocrinologist call them and have them fight it out.
Yeah.
And when you get off of that and onto an ACE inhibitor or some other medication, and I don't know your situation, so beta blocker may be the perfect thing for you. But you may find that that fatigue goes away.
Yeah.
I had a case a million years ago of impotence that completely went away when the patient was taken off their beta blocker.
Right.
So that was one of the happiest patients you could ever imagine. Mm-hmm. So just always think drugs, and let's look at that first and then go from there. Okay, we're completely
And check
out
yourself
of time.
For sleep.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's all sleep kinds of sleep apnea, testosterone, thyroid, anemia. Those are all the things that they've got to do.
You're listening to Weird Medicine.
I keep leaving messages about weird stuff you suggest on the podcast. But not yesterday, but I think it was the day before yesterday, say Thursday. So like Monday or Tuesday, anyway.
Anyway.
I signed up for the Noom app that you were talking about. And so far, like yesterday was the first day that I fully logged my, entire day. And the accountability really helps. Like,
yes,
I've tried, my Fitness Pal.
Okay, what she's talking about is I'm doing that thing. They're not a sponsor. Mm-hmm. Called Noom. Mm-hmm. It's an app. And I talked about it on the show. I've lost 21, 22 pounds on it now. And one of the aspects of it is accountability. I have to report every single thing I put in my mouth to my counselor. Mm-hmm. And she listens to the show. So I, she got a little frustrated with me because I said, she's so hot that I didn't want to. Well, the feminist part of me doesn't like that it's about my looks. But it's like, no, that's a dude thing.
Yes.
I have no shot with her. No. It's not that. No. It's just that she's
attractive,
hot.
Yeah.
She's attractive. Yep. And I don't want to admit to her that I ate a whole bag of freaking Snickers. So I don't do it.
Yep.
So that's what she's talking about. So let's see what she had to say.
Tried, quote unquote accountability through gyms and friends going to the gym with me and all this other kind of stuff, and it never worked. But
it did work for me going to the gym when I had a friend that I went with every single time. And that was in medical school. I had a friend who was a ham radio operator, and that's where we knew each other. And we would meet at the gym three times a week and encourage each other. That made a difference. And that was the one time when I was actually buff, was because he and I would compete against each other. Who can curl the most on the, on the Nautilus curling machine? We got to the point where, we could curl the max on the Nautilus machine. And, I was in really good shape. But you got to have somebody like that. They got to go with you every single time.
Yes.
So I agree with her on that.
You have somebody actually holding you accountable for.
Oh, anyway, yes, I agree. Accountability is huge. For me, that's what I needed, because before that, I could say, well, I'll just have four Snickers because they don't bother my stomach, so they must be good for me because everything else seems to bother my stomach anymore. And then, I'd go back, I'll just have a handful this time. And the next thing I knew, I'd eaten a whole bag. And I was just going up and up and up in weight. And since I've had this accountability, it's not just that, but that was a big part of it. Just the ability to have to tell somebody, uh-oh, I screwed up, and I don't want to tell them I screwed up so I don't screw up. Mm-hmm. Now, it'll be interesting when I'm no longer in the program, but I've forged new habits. It's been 100 days, and I'm eating differently without even thinking about it now, you know?
Good.
So, but anyway, so yeah, accountability is a big deal.
How
so
much have you lost?
21, 22. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going for 33 total. So that'll be at my ideal body weight. My BMI is below 25, which I'm not a big fan of BMI, but is below 20. It's all we got. below 25, so I'm no longer considered overweight by medical standards, which is the first time in my adult life.
But the key is, how do you feel?
A million. I feel like a million bucks.
Yeah.
People notice. That's the first thing. People notice, well, hey, you look pretty good. I've lost so much weight I can no longer fit in my expensive hospital clothes. So Brooks Brothers is losing a bunch of money because I was like, I can either buy a shitload more Brooks Brothers pants and shirts, or I can just switch to scrubs. So I decided to switch to scrubs. And I feel better in these. It's a lot, hell of a lot more comfortable. I always look, you know, I don't fit. I just look crappy anyway. I got a stupid body. It's just too straight. And when it's not straight and I got a gut, then it's disgusting. So I just feel better about myself. Mm-hmm. I've got more energy. Just, you know, yeah.
Better.
Yeah, just
period.
Better.
It's
feel
all
better.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So anyway, I'm actually now, for the first time in my life, I'm motivated to actually work out and stuff too, which I, of course, have not done, but I'm motivated to do it.
Well, don't start jogging. That's how you blew up your...
I know. No, I'm not.
Your leg last time.
I did. I don't know what was wrong with me thinking I was going to... I know what it was. My son was doing cross country, and looked like, that looks like fun. And I didn't realize that he was a semi-elite athlete. And when I would see him come around the corner in front of everybody, and I'd be cheering, that wasn't going to be me. So, and then I tore my gastrocnemius muscle, which for those of you who are lay people, which is most everybody that's listening to this, hopefully, that was my calf muscle. I ripped it in two. And talk about pain. And then I looked stupid. I'm in the middle of this track at the middle school, and I'm just laying down holding my leg like a big baby. Yes. And I had to limp home. Terrible. Jogging sucks.
It's a terrible idea.
So.
Oh, my gosh.
And I almost bought one of those $2,500 elliptico things because I thought that would be fun. It's an elliptical bicycle.
Sure.
Where you stand on it, you don't sit, because I don't want to sit on a bike because I don't want to get pudendal neuropathy.
Get your prostate all pissed off at you.
Yeah, and your dick, too. Your dick can go numb if you don't sit on that thing, right? If you're going to be a bike rider, by the way, look for seats that support the back part of your ass and don't make your taint put a bunch of weight on a real narrow thing.
Yeah.
So I didn't want to do that, but I have found... a virtual reality thing, exercise workout, and I'm going to try that.
Okay.
See, because that's what I really want is an exercise bike that's hooked up to a virtual reality, and then, like, you run away from aliens or something, and the faster you pedal, the less you get killed. Or, you know, that you may have a spaceship or something, you're going through an asteroid field. I think that would be – that I would do.
Yeah, that would be cool. It'd be cool if you could be like it'd be cool if you could put yourself into like one of those virtual reality games, the shoot 'em up games, where you could be like the person trying to avoid getting shot.
Yes, but it's all dependent on how fast you're going on the bike, and maybe it would change, like if you're going uphill, it would change the resistance and stuff like that. I would love that.
That'd be cool.
I found one online, but it's not quite ready for prime time yet. Mm-hmm. But if anybody knows anything like that that would work with the Oculus Go, let me know. All right. Let's try. Oh, here's one for you. Let's see. I thought it was. Oh, yeah. Here you go. This is a question for Dr.
Hey, Dr. Steve. Got a question for you. 43 years old. I go to the gym 5 days a week, and I have a yearly physical. And before my last physical, I decided to try something different. So for 6 months, we went vegan. So I cut out all meat, chicken, eggs, dairy. If it If it had a mother, I didn't need it. No honey and no gelatin. And to boot, I also cut out alcohol and carbonated drinks. So, bread.
I think I just booed over the important part.
Not consisting mainly of fruits, vegetables, and bread, and I made sure the bread didn't have any eggs or milk in it either. And that also left me with a protein and soy-based diet. And we did that for 6 months. So when I get my labs back from the doctor, my total cholesterol has went from 196 to 228. And my triglycerides went from 264 to a whopping 554.
Mm-hmm.
And I gained 14 pounds.
What
so
the,
my
where
question
did the laughing
is,
go?
What the hell? Thank you very much.
I fucked that up. I hit all the wrong buttons. But anyway.
Well,
so
we know what to tell you.
He went on a totally plant-based diet.
Right, vegan-based diet.
And he gained weight, and his cholesterol and his triglycerides went up. So what did he do wrong? If anything.
Well, you know, it sounds like to me, Dr. Steve, he fell in that same habit a lot of people get into. They read these things that say healthy or organic or are all good for you, and they don't read in there and look at the ingredients where there's a lot of hidden sugars. And you'll get
Sugar itself is vegan.
That's correct. And I think that's
table sugar is vegan.
Yeah, because you think about
honey is not.
No, but still, yeah, it's the hidden sugars. If you notice, the one interesting thing you said is triglycerides shot up. So his liver is being overstimulated with these sugars, kicks that up, and that kicks up the production of the cholesterol too. So you know what you want to
carbohydrates are the enemy, not right. fats.
Right, that's correct. So you know what it looks like to me is that he was trying to do the right thing, but he wound up eating the foods that were absolutely categorically wrong. If you want to be a true vegan and not gain any weight, you have to eat kind of like an ape. In a while, you know, and eat 16 pounds of spinach and kale and stuff daily, and then that won't happen. You'll get all your protein.
Can you get enough protein from that?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know what they found is that one of the reasons that animals in a while, specifically, and I can speak specifically to apes, that eat these, they get a very small amount of animal protein in the bugs and stuff that are on the leaves.
Right.
And they found that in captivity, actually, and but so what he was doing...
Oh, that's interesting because they'd wash their food.
They washed
when
it,
they gave
clean
it to him.
And, right, and took all the bugs. Yeah. Took all the bugs off it. That's exactly right. So this gentleman had a good idea, but the bottom line is if he's eating a bunch of rice, if he's eating a bunch of bread, if he's eating these things, the grains that convert in your bloodstream almost instantly to sugar, spiking your serum glucose, it's spiking triglycerides, it spikes your cholesterol. He had it close, but I would say... Stop the sugar, you know, the fruit drinks. Stop the fruit. I hate to say it.
Well, cut down on the fruit.
Yeah, or at least cut down the fruit. And absolutely cut down on all the grains and the rices, et cetera. Go back to the green leafy vegetables if you want to be vegan. But I'm a huge fan of, again, moderation. I think a little bit of meat, you know, we talk about a lot of times on here the pescatarian diets.
Yeah.
Based mostly on veggies and fish. That's kind of the diet that I go to. So he was close.
Yep.
He just had a bunch. You know, I think in retrospect, he can look back and see there were a bunch of hidden sugars in there, and that's what derailed him.
Sure. I see a lot of vegans who get fat, mm-hmm. and their indices don't do well because they're eating a lot of pasta and potatoes. Mm-hmm. And then, as you said, other things. And so starches are just sugars that are chained together.
Right.
So pasta, whole grain pasta, even.
Sure. Even
potatoes,
any pasta, period.
Any of that stuff. Yeah. And they're filling and they taste good. And it's like, well, I can't have all these other things, but I can eat all the damn potatoes I want. And then that's the problem.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
I'm just reading, vegan diets a lot of times just rely too heavily on carbs.
Yep.
And there's a report in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, and it says... 99% of our genes were formed before the development of agriculture and the consumption of grains like wheat around 10,000 years ago, which you and I have been talking about for a long time, that our ancestors didn't have gluten and a lot of wheat in their diet because they hadn't developed agriculture yet. And these things are a mismatch with our genes for a lot of people. And then you refine it. and you hybridize stuff and you spray stuff and genetic modification, whether it's through GMO type stuff or just Mendelian genetic modification. It, you know, we're eating things that our bodies didn't evolve to process very well.
Exactly.
So, but anyway, so yeah, that's probably what's going on there. And I'm with Scott. I think green leafy vegetables applies in another place too. These people that are eating ketogenic diets, if they're just eating meat, they're malnourished. They will lose weight, but they're losing weight because they're malnourished.
Right. You know, there's as much protein in a head of broccoli as there is in a filet mignon.
Is that right?
Yep. And you think about it, those, you know, rhinoceros is...
yeah, that's you're right.
Giraffes, et cetera.
Herbivores must be getting protein.
They get
somewhere.
Protein from plants, but the reason they do is because they eat such massive amounts.
Yeah,
right. They're not protein dense, but there's adequate protein if you eat enough of it. Which is you know what you and I we have to have eat at certain times because we have jobs and families and blah blah blah. But you know if we're living in the out in the jungle and you know, we're going to eat and sleep most of the time. You can kind of eat at your leisure throughout the day and get those calories, but we just can't do that.
Okay, so I'll give you some vegetables and you tell me, we don't have enough time for this stupid game.
Okay.
Weirdly, and this one surprises me, one of the vegetables highest in protein is watercress.
Yeah.
Cruciferous plant grows in water, has a high protein content. 1 cup of chopped watercress contains 0.8 grams of protein, 100% of vitamin K and B vitamins. Okay, let's see here. How about spinach? Protein accounts for 30% of its calories.
Mm.
I love spinach. Raw spinach is my favorite
thing
as far as vegetables are concerned.
Kale and Swiss chard and things of that nature.
Yeah, Chinese cabbage, bok choy, asparagus, and also you can piss and stink up the bathroom. 1 cup contains 2.9 grams of protein, mustard greens, blech. Okay, broccoli. 1 cup serving of raw chopped broccoli has 2.6 grams of protein.
Mm.
And all the essential amino acids. Also contains folate, manganese, potassium, phosphorus, and vitamin C. So people who are on a ketogenic diet, if they will skew highly toward the green leafy vegetables and lean animal protein, that's a reasonably safe and effective diet for people. I'm not a big fan of diets per se, but as a lifestyle, it's reasonable, particularly if you're gluten sensitive like I am. You know, and don't want to eat a bunch of potatoes because that's what gained a lot of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, all right. Well, I'm looking to see if we have any dick or nut questions. Well, I have a Cialis question.
I'll say I had a masturbation.
That. Oh, you did?
Yeah. Well, no.
Hey, Dr. Steve, this is the...
You want to do it and we'll save this one for next time?
The John Popper thing, yeah.
Oh,
Swinger guy that had called a while back about the projectile ability of ejaculation and also about Viagra versus Cialis. I have a question relating to the Viagra versus Cialis. Blue Chew, is it safe? Does it actually use the ingredients?
Okay, so I don't know anything about Blue Chew, but if they're FDA approved and they are selling what they say is the same ingredient as Viagra, then that's sildenafil, then yes, that would be safe as long as there's no contraindications. Mm-hmm. The deal with these, we only got 30 seconds, is that compounding pharmacies can make a chewable Viagra because there isn't one commercially on the market. Mm-hmm. So they can make anything that's not commercially on the market. And you can go to any compounding pharmacy and get Viagra lozenges and, you know, and chewables and stuff like that. And those are perfectly legal and they're just as safe as the regular. So anyway.
You're listening to Weird Medicine.
Well.
Leaving a message ends just too soon. I was busy J-offing and it just ends. I couldn't end.
What?
So I guess I'll ask you a question.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm close to diabetic, pre-diabetic.
We probably could have started this call right here. Mm-hmm. I don't know all that preamble.
Good day is a good call screen.
Diabetic, and they gave me pre, maybe even into it. They were never super clear, but they gave me a few medications. I don't have to prick myself. They asked for it occasionally just to make sure, but I don't know what they are off the top of my head.
Okay. First off, if you're diabetic, mm-hmm. you need to be checking your blood sugars.
Yes.
And you need to know what medication you're on.
Yes.
So let's just a little advice from your old Uncle Steve.
But I've been going on an extreme diet, you know, 1,200 calories.
Okay.
Every day because I have a cruise coming up in a month and a half. And you know what? I stopped taking my medication because, damn it, if I'm eating nothing, my blood sugar should be fine.
Okay. So if we could rely on this, we wouldn't need to check our blood sugars.
Right.
Because you can't tell most of the time when your blood sugar is elevated. That's why most people who are diagnosed with diabetes are actually surprised by it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm okay with people doing diet control of their diabetes. Matter of fact, I would prefer that.
Yes.
Most people with type 2 diabetes, which is the type where you have plenty of insulin, but your body just can't understand the signal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's those people, many of them can be controlled with diet alone.
Yes.
If you'll just do it. So he's doing this 1,200 calorie diet. Don't know. He just said the calorie. Doesn't tell me how many carbs it is.
Right.
It could be all rice.
Yep.
You know, if it's all just white bread, 1,200 calories
bread,
of white bread, then that's not going to help
him. It's going to make it worse.
If he's doing a low glycemic index 1,200 calorie diet, mm-hmm. Under the supervision of a nutritionist at the diabetes center,
I
have no problem with that. And I'm even okay with him coming off his medication and seeing what happens. But how are you going to know if it's working if you're not testing your blood sugar?
Right.
So that's the issue I have.
Agreed.
With his strategy.
Totally
right
agreed.
Now. Let's see.
And all that. Anyways, I want to hear your thoughts on it.
Oh,
so
well,
I still take them. Okay. I know you don't know the medication I'm on. But
well, dude, you don't even know, so.
Let's say work with somebody. You get the deal.
Yeah, I get the deal. So I think it's totally fine. It's a decent strategy.
Mm-hmm.
Lifestyle management for a lot of people can, if not cure their diabetes, can certainly improve it to the
yes.
point where they need minimal medication. And if you start this early, you can very often prevent yourself from needing insulin down the road and kidney failure and all these things. So I'm okay with the strategy. I just don't like the way you're doing it.
Mm.
So if you will at least monitor yourself,
yes,
and then and then keep a diary and then take it in, that's fine. Or do it under your doctor's supervision.
Mm. But you got to have your blood sugar checked or you'll never know.
Yeah, you'll never know
if you're making improvements or not.
There's no way to know.
No.
Now, down the road, they're going to want to do a thing called a hemoglobin A1C, which is probably one of the things they did to diagnosis in the first place.
Right.
Hemoglobin A1C is a really cool test because it gives you a three-month kind of rolling average of what your blood sugars have been. So if you did blood sugars throughout the day and then average them all up and then average them over 30 days. And then every day you do the last 30 days or 3 months, sorry, but, you know, then you get this rolling average. So a hemoglobin A1C gives you about a 3 month rolling average of your average blood sugar.
Mm.
And it'll correlate with that. And it basically happens because there's an irreversible reaction between glucose and hemoglobin where it can attach. And once it does, it doesn't go away.
Mm.
So, and the amount of glucose that's attached to the hemoglobin in your blood is proportional to your average blood sugar over the last 90 days because a blood cell lasts about anywhere between 90 and 150 days.
Right.
Okay. So it's a good marker. And so, you know, every 3 months when you're first working with somebody with diabetes, you can see, is it going up? Is it going down? Or is it staying the same? There's no fourth thing. It'll be one of those, you know.
Right.
And if it's going down, then you're doing all the right things.
Right on.
Okay. So he needs all of this. And
yes.
He just needs to talk to his provider. It's totally fine. They'll be open to it. You know, my doc, when my blood pressure started to elevate, I said, look, I'm getting ready to go on this Noom app. Do you think we could wait to put me on blood pressure medicine? He said, no, let's just put you on it. And then when you lose the weight, then we'll try to back you off and see what happens. And I actually am kind of glad he did that because I would have had yet another 3 months of
elevated blood pressure. Because even with the, I've lost 25 pounds on Noom so far, and but my blood pressure hasn't come down that much. I was surprised. It's genetic, you know. Hell, everybody, every man in my family had high blood pressure. So
running wide open.
And I love that Noom though.
Yeah, you're doing really well.
Yeah, I'm very happy with it. That's very
a lot
happy
of weight.
With it.
Yep.
All right, but I've still got 10 to go to hit my ideal.
No, my God, no. So,
well, shit.
A wicked egg allergy, right? So food allergies in general. I'm just curious, you guys' thoughts and opinions on exposing them to, you know, said food allergy, and you know, does that actually help get rid of it? You know, I don't know. There's a lot of mixed opinions on it, so I'm curious to hear what you guys think.
Well, okay. So here's the thing: there's prevention of allergies, and there's treatment of allergies, and food allergies are really kind of, you know, they're a tough one. I had a friend who had a kid who's now a pharmacist, and I can't even count how many times he almost died. They'd come home because he ate one pea. He was allergic to all kinds of stuff.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, when he was little, they didn't know if he was going to make it. Now he's, you know, hale and hearty, and you don't want to mess with him. Somebody came in and tried to rob them, and I think he shot him. So he's doing pretty well.
Good.
But, you know, more and more, so the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention show that food allergies in children have increased 50% between 1997 and 2011, and they affect one kid out of 13, and that's like two students in every classroom. So I know all these parents are like, well, I can't even send peanut butter to
school. What was the number again on that?
One in 13.
Dang.
Yep. Now, that's going to be a varying severity.
Sure, you know, of course. Still,
but 90% of the allergic reactions come from eight foods: milk, eggs, peanuts, tree nuts, soy, wheat, fish, and shellfish. So there's not a whole lot of shellfish sandwiches going into school, but there are a lot of peanut butter sandwiches and stuff.
Sure.
And, you know, there are a few theories, including one linked to our society's obsession with fighting germs, and this is called the hygiene hypothesis. And what the hygiene hypothesis states is that lack of exposure to these agents early in childhood can create a situation where the immune system mistakes food protein as invading germs. And so it's not that they're not being exposed to peanuts. It's that they're not being exposed to bacteria, say, in the soil or something that have these proteins on them that are similar to proteins on peanuts.
Okay.
And so now when they get the peanuts, all of a sudden the body just, you know, tries to attack those antigens because they've never been exposed to them before.
Okay.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
And, you know, nobody knows the answer to this. That's the problem. It's still being studied, still being debated. But there are a lot of people that think that that hypothesis at least has some merit because, you know, we're just our kids are being brought up in bubbles, you know, in clean rooms, basically. Yep. And, you know, I didn't let my kids just play in the dirt. Hell, I ate dirt, you know, mud pie sandwiches when I was a kid. I remember doing it. Of course, my favorite story of my youth was I was in the backyard of a friend's house, and everybody had left me and done something else. I was in the backyard by myself, and I start screaming bloody murder, just screaming, like I was being, you know, attacked. And they all came running, and they were, "What's wrong?" And I went, "A butterfly."
Oh.
I didn't. Butterflies freaked me out because of the way they flew.
Oh, okay.
It was so chaotic. I didn't like it.
Oh, okay. So how old were you? 12, 13?
Oh, no. Yeah, right. I think I was 3. So I had that on my side.
There you go.
They're also wondering if medicines like antibiotics or acid-reducing stomach medications are being overused. But, you know, we would know if there was a correlation. Most kids are not being given acid-reducing stomach medications. Most adults are.
Mm-hmm.
A huge number. I think you know, for a while there, omeprazole was the number one prescribed drug for adults in the world. It was one of those. It might have been Zantac, one of those stomach acid-reducing. So I'm leery of that one. And then, of course, climate change is being blamed on it. You know, these climatologists say that, you know, we are in the hottest decade on record, and the warmer climate may worsen respiratory allergies, but still doesn't explain the food allergies. So I really am on the side of the clean room hypothesis.
Because we've talked about it before, but you know, on the show, but, you know, there's a higher risk for children that are born via C-section having asthma and having other types of diseases because they're born in a clean room. You know, they don't get all of the
We're not just squatting them into the rice field.
Right, the good bacteria.
So you're saying C-section?
Yep. Kids are higher risk
and
of asthma.
Asthma. Okay, let's just, by God,
see if I'm right.
No, I think you are.
I think so.
Cesarean section without medical indication and the risk of childhood asthma and attenuation by breastfeeding. Now look, whatever you do, breastfeed your damn kid if you can.
And that was the second part of the story. Yeah, if you can.
Because, and I think I do know this study, and it's going to show that these kids that had, C-sections had an increase in asthma, but that was blunted in the group of women that breastfed their kids.
Right, exactly.
So let's see here. Our study found that C-section without medical indication was significantly associated with elevated asthma risk. And so it was about a 58% increase. Now, remember, that's relative risk, absolute risk, still very low.
Sure.
However, this risk was attenuated in children fed by exclusive breastfeeding in the first 6 months after birth. And I think you can do it even shorter time than that and still get benefit from it. My littlest one, Beck, would be either severely debilitated today or may not have made it if my wife hadn't been breastfeeding. So he's five days into his life. I walk into his room to check on him in his crib, and the heat, I could feel it come, you know, radiating off of him. So I, you know, I get him out of his little sleeper thing, and he is just burning up. Check his temp, 105.
Oh, bless his heart.
Before we even did any, oh, and he's breathing 40 times a minute, too.
Right.
Just happened, just suddenly. So I didn't even stop, go, or collect $200. Get him in the car. I'm on my way to the hospital, and I'm calling our pediatrician. He meets him at, and he had respiratory syncytial virus, which causes croup in older kids.
RSV, right?
Yeah, RSV. And my wife had a cold when she delivered, and lo and behold, she had RSV. So she gave it to him. So in adults, it just causes a cold. But in kids, it causes croup. And in babies, it can kill them, or it can cause chronic asthma. But she was breastfeeding, and this kid, because she gave it to him, she had the antibodies, fresh antibodies, IgM antibodies in her breast milk, and she was able to confer protection to him through these antibodies, and the kid just sailed right through.
Cool.
Totally sailed right through. Totally fine.
And ran cross country. He continues to sail. He continues to sail.
Yep.
He's a beautiful child.
Yep. He's a good little feller.
Yep.
So anyway, I think that so the risk of asthma with a C-section, obviously you don't want to do them without medical indication, to the individual is low, but is that's a huge number, 58% increase in risk. But the real take-home of this is that breastfeeding is good for you. So if you can breastfeed, highly recommend it. And if you're having trouble, they have breastfeeding coordinators and coaches and everything in every hospital. And we had to, you know, Tacy had trouble breastfeeding with Liam. And what we had to do was weigh him before and after just to see how much he was getting. So you would weigh him and then breastfeed. And then as long as he weighed 3 ounces more, then he got enough.
Oh, cool.
You know, so it's kind of cool. All right.
Steve, my name is Mike Lane, and I recently had an MRI and for kidney stones. They didn't find any kidney stones, but he did say that I had a plugged liver for some reason. I'm not really sure. He didn't really give me much information, I would like to know what I can do about this and if there is anything that I should do with a follow-up. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to give your doctor one of these. We were doing an MRI, and we didn't find anything in your gallbladder, but your liver's clogged up. See ya.
Nice.
What an asshole.
And call us if you have any trouble.
Yeah. What are you supposed to do with that? Okay. So I'm gonna call your, assuming that this is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, I'm going to call that healthcare provider an asshole. I can do that. If I call him a quack, then it's actionable.
True.
But I can call him an asshole all I want.
It's your personal
opinion. I learned that from Penn and Teller.
That's right.
Because they said, oh, you know, we can't call these psychics fakes.
Right.
But we can call them assholes all we want. Because that's just our opinion.
Right.
Right. what this probably is fatty liver.
Fatty liver, right.
Now, fatty liver can be caused by diabetes. It can be caused by drinking. It can just be genetic.
Right.
There is a condition called alpha-1 antitrypsin disorder, and people who are carriers of this, you know, you have to have two genes to have the disease, but if you have one, the only manifestation could be that you have fatty liver. And so sometimes when I see fatty liver in somebody that I didn't expect it in, I'll check, and they'll be heterozygous for alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, which is heterozygous just means they've got one normal gene and one shitty gene.
Right, abnormal.
Alpha-1 antitrypsin disorder, you may not know that you have it in your family, but you could suspect it if you had a bunch of people in your family that had liver disease and or lung disease at an early age. You know, people that had emphysema and that was just really bad, and maybe they died from it at like 40 or something, and nobody knew why. If you had two or three people like that in your family, you know, this is an easy genetic test to do. It's a real simple blood test.
Okay.
It's not common, but I wouldn't say it's uncommon either. It's certainly not rare.
Right.
And in this area where we are, there's pools of it. You know, I've seen more alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency in this area than I've ever seen any other area of the country that I've practiced in. So, again, that whole consanguinity thing, you know, if you weren't here at the beginning of the show, that just means inbreeding. So, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease is a, you know, the main characteristic is too much fat stored in the liver cells. And we can also call that steatohepatitis. When you start seeing elevated liver function tests, steato meaning fat and hepatitis just meaning irritation of the liver or inflammation of the liver, that can cause liver inflammation, which may progress to scarring and then, you know, cirrhosis down the road. So if you have this, there are some things that can be done about it. And rather than just your doctor going, well, hell yeah, you got fatty liver disease. Good luck, old buddy. Go see a hepatologist or a liver specialist. And most GI docs can handle this. Most of them are experts in liver disease. Things that can cause it would be high cholesterol, high triglycerides.
High triglycerides, sure.
You know, those bad are blood diets. Fats.
Yep.
Metabolic syndrome, which is, you know, basically high triglycerides with high blood pressure. Being overweight, women with polycystic ovary syndrome. If you have sleep apnea, you can somehow, I don't know the mechanism of that one, and diabetes, as I said, all these genetic things as well. You can diet control this sometimes. As Dr. Scott said, getting more active is important. Treating the underlying problem. If you have high triglycerides, treating the high triglycerides with omega-3 purified fish
fatty
oil.
Acids, sure, fatty acids.
There are prescription versions of that, and there's one out there now. I think Vascepa it's called. Mm-hmm. Vascepa is a purified omega-3 fatty acid. If I'm remembering this right, and it actually has been shown to prevent heart disease. Mm-hmm. At the same rate that statins do,
wow.
But only in people that have high triglycerides. Mm-hmm. So you'll get a 30% decrease in the first heart attack, and then you'll get progressive decreases in subsequent heart attacks. So, but the first line of treatment is diet and exercise, losing weight, getting to your ideal body weight. And if you can lose 10% of your body weight, so if you weigh 200 pounds, if you can get down to 180, it helps. And they'll also vaccinate you against hepatitis A and hepatitis B in case you get those. When you have fatty liver, it's going to be worse. Those are the kinds of things they can do. So you want to have this followed up.
Sure. Absolutely.
I'm hoping this person is listening.
Yes. Me too.
And just ask for follow-up.
Definitely can be treated.
If your primary says, well, I don't know what to do about this, then... And that, you know, they're going to sound just like they're from Appalachia. Then they can always send you to a specialist and just get checked out. See how serious it is. What do you need to do? Can we nip this in the bud? How far has it gotten? And if it's just a little bit of fatty liver without any inflammation, yeah, you can get this under control pretty easily with some work and lead a long and normal, happy life. Okay.
Yep.
Kid, I became blood brothers with. Hey, Dr. Steve.
Hey, man.
When I was a kid, I became blood brothers with my buddy from church, and I was just wondering. It was all, you know, it wasn't much blood. We cut our hands somehow. I forgot how we did it, but I was just wondering: is his blood still in my body? Does it work like that?
Beautiful question. I love this question. And the answer is there may be some. Okay, so when you are blood brothers, you cut your thumb or your hand, and
your
then
palms,
you grasp
sure.
them, and then you mix blood. The likelihood that any significant amount of blood goes from one person to the other, because the pressure is for the blood to come out, not to go in, right? I mean, when you bleed out, you don't bleed in. So even if one or two cells are in there, well, let's just say you're blood type A and they're blood type B. What's going to happen when those cells mix? You're going to get a clotting reaction. Mm. You know, that's why you can't just give blood to just anybody.
Right.
And then the spleen will see that happening and it'll cull it out and destroy it. Now, could there be some molecules of your friend? Hell yeah.
Sure.
There could be hydrogen molecules. There could be oxygen molecules, you know, from the water, all kinds of stuff. And that could, those could be in significant numbers, you know, orders of magnitude. Salt, to get, oh, I don't know what, look up what the atomic weight of salt is.
Okay. But,
I used to know this stuff by heart.
Ask her. She'll know.
Oh, yeah. Hey, Alexa, what's the atomic weight of salt?
Salt's atomic weight is 11.
Okay. So in 11 grams of salt, there are 6.022 times 10 to the 23 molecules of sodium chloride times 10 to the 23. So that's a 10 with 23 zeros. 23 zeros,
yep.
Okay. It's a huge, huge
Mass,
number.
Yep.
So if you had 100 molecules of hydrogen left over from the water that was in this guy's blood, then, you know, that seems like a large number. But, you know, when we're talking about trillions of quadrillions and, you know, unthinkable numbers of molecules. So what is more interesting to me is this theory of large numbers. It is almost certain that you have at least one molecule of water in your body that came from Christopher Columbus's piss. Okay?
Sure.
So Christopher Columbus coming across the ocean, pissing in the ocean.
Right.
And through diffusion, evaporation, rain, and, you know, all these molecules working their way, diffusing through the environment, it is likely that you have at least one molecule of Christopher Columbus's piss in your body somewhere.
Mm.
Now, there's... How would you mark that? You can't.
No.
You know, if you had some radioactive element that only existed on another planet, you could have maybe marked the water molecules in his body and, you know, go back in time, mark them, and then come forward in time and see if anybody has. But there's no such thing. There's no radioactive element that exists somewhere else that we can't make here. Mm-hmm. But just through pure statistics, you can calculate that, the likelihood that's the case.
That's crazy.
Now, that's true of every other person that was on the Nina, the Pina, and the Santa Maria. Not only them, but every other person that lived in that time.
Mm-hmm.
That's how huge these numbers are.
Or me, since I may have pissed in the ocean last weekend, maybe.
Yeah, those have diffused quite significantly, but not enough so that everyone on the planet has, you know, Dr. Scott molecules in them.
Yeah. You're listening to Weird Medicine.
And though you will try to always get it right, the beauty of life lives inside of you. And I hope someday you find it too.
Tacy, do you experience stress?
No.
Or have anxiety?
Oh, absolutely never.
Or chronic pain?
Do you know what drives me crazy? Are those people who will put on like Facebook, oh, now I know anxiety's real. Oh, are you kidding me?
Yeah, really.
I mean... What the hell? Where have you been?
Have you never had a kid? Because if you have a kid, you know what anxiety is.
No, these are people with children. I mean, are they just floating through life? Like, anyway.
Well, if you're having any of those things or having trouble sleeping at least once a week, you're not alone. Many of us do. And personally, I have difficulty sleeping sometimes. But I have this myalgic disorder called polymyalgia rheumatica that causes my muscles to ache, and it makes it difficult for me to sleep, and I just feel crummy. And I was searching for something that would help, and then I discovered Feels, F-E-A-L-S. Feels is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. And what does it do? It naturally helps reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. And it certainly helped my chronic pain. I really can tell the difference if I don't take it. No, that's just me. That's an anecdotal report for me.
It helps me too, Steve. It really helps, especially to calm me down at night.
Yeah.
It really does.
So you just place a few drops of Feels, that's F-E-A-L-S, under your tongue. Feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is finding your right dose is important, and everyone's dose is different. So leave room to experiment over the course of a week or so. You may need to take more or less to get the effects you're after. Are you new to CBD? Feels offers a free CBD hotline to help guide your personal experience. Who's doing that? No one. Well, Feels is. They're the only ones that I'm aware of. Feels works naturally to help you feel better, and there's no high, there's no hangover, there's no addiction. Join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel anytime. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. Become a member today by going to feals.com/fluid. That's F-L-U-I-D, and you'll get a 50% off deal for your first order with free shipping. That's feals.com/fluid to become a member and get 50% automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Feals.com/fluid.
Hey, Dr. Steve, is it true that when we sneeze that our heart stops beating like for a millisecond, and then when people say God bless you, that's just because the devil can't get a hold of you and damn you eternally? Just wondering. I've heard that ever since I was a kid.
Sure. And you probably also heard that you blow your soul out with every sneeze, too. That's why people say God bless you or Gesundheit when you sneeze. And but there is actually something to this. Your heart doesn't stop in the sense that you have a cardiac arrest, but there's a thing called sternutation, and that's this reflex that's, it's a brainstem reflex. And when you have something that irritates the upper lining in the nose, these nerves carry the signal to the brainstem. It triggers the eyes to close and the chest to contract. And then your lungs expel a burst of air. And but one thing that doesn't happen is there's any signal to the heart to stop. So what does happen is when you have this huge increase in intrathoracic pressure, when you... when you get that sort of just right before you sneeze, it's hard for blood to pump into a thorax where the pressure is, from the outside is so high at that second. So for that 1 second, you get an interruption of blood flow. It's not complete. It just decreases it. And when that happens, the blood supply coming out of the heart will decrease for a second. Then you may have a compensation where it actually increases soon thereafter. So,
you're listening to Weird Medicine.
Number one thing, don't take Dr. advice
Steve,
from some asshole on the radio.
What's the difference between Narcan and smelling salts? I've seen both of them, used on TV. It's probably not real, but... they wake an unconscious person up, and I was just wondering how it works in the body.
Yeah, now this
good
is
question,
a great
good
damn question.
Question. Yep,
I'm gonna. I wish I had. Well, I'll just give him some. That's a great question. So you got an unconscious person, mm-hmm. and you've seen this a million times. They put the smelling salts under their nose, mm-hmm. and then they wake up. Mm-hmm. Well, how's that different from Narcan, mm-hmm. which we're promoting for use with? Opioid overdose.
Could be also
and they're unconscious as well. Yeah. Okay, so smelling salts really is nothing more than ammonia salts, and if you ever smell it, just take a bottle of ammonia. Don't get close.
You waft it. It's called wafting.
The way that you waft, by the way, we learned this in organic chemistry, hold it away from you, about a foot away from your body,
right.
Put your hand over it, and then wave it towards your nose.
Right.
Don't ever stick your nose right over the bottle.
No.
Never do that with anything.
No.
Hold it away from you, and then use your other hand to wave it towards you.
Yeah.
And if you do that, that's the smell that you get with these smelling salts. And if someone has fainted, that will wake them up. But... or if they're intoxicated with alcohol or something like that. And here's the thing. I've never used them clinically, ever. We have them, but I've never used them. If someone faints, the right way to wake them up is to get their is to lay them down gently on the ground and then get their feet, hold their feet up. You can even put them on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And like if you're kneeling in front of them, just kneel and put their legs, their ankles on your shoulders. Mm-hmm. And it's usually good to do this witnessed, because if somebody walks in to your exam room while you're doing this, it's going to look not, it's not going to look good for you. Oh, well, they fainted. I was just, you know, and come on. But, or you, maybe a better way to do it if you're in a room with furniture is to put their feet up on
a couch or chair. I agree.
And support their head. I mean, don't let them flop down, but, you know, you can put a little pillow under the head. But that'll usually wake a fainter up right away, because their issue is the circulatory system in their body has opened up and gravity is pulling blood out of their brain to the body. Mm-hmm. And this can happen for a lot of different reasons. It has lots to do with the autonomic nervous system. Don't worry about it. But or people who stand up too fast and their body doesn't adjust. You know, when you stand up, the veins and arteries in your body are supposed to tense up so that there's more resistance to flow and you're pushing blood back into the brain. But if it doesn't do that fast enough, particularly in people my age and up, it works a little bit slower. You stand up, all of a sudden the blood starts to rush out of your brain and you feel faint, and you may even faint. And again, the treatment for those people is to lay them down on the ground and get their feet up. Don't hold them up. I've seen people, you know, grab under their shoulders and try to hold them up.
No.
If the blood continues to rush out of their brain, they'll have a pseudo seizure. And it looks just like a real seizure. And it may even be one. I've never seen a good physiologic explanation for it, but they'll jerk like they're having a seizure. And that's their way of telling you, put me down, you know. So anyway, now, you have someone that's intoxicated with alcohol, there isn't a whole lot you can do, so they'll use the smelling salts just as a noxious stimuli to just wake them up.
And get their attention, sure.
You know, loading them up with coffee, you know, it doesn't really do much.
No.
Might keep them from going to sleep because you're just giving them something to do. Time is the main thing.
Time.
If someone is acutely intoxicated with alcohol and they are comatose, and you don't know how much they've had to drink, you got to take them to the emergency room, because you can die from alcohol poisoning.
Yes.
You know, if you see two champagne bottles off to the side and an enema tube sticking out of their ass and they're unconscious, they may die.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, another reason to drink champagne, don't take it in enema form, because once you've shoved two bottles of champagne up your ass, you have no control over how quickly this stuff is absorbed, and you're going to absorb all of it.
Yep. Very quickly.
Very quickly.
At the same time,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. Because of the surface area of the bowel. You know, if you're drinking it, the stomach's smaller surface area.
And you get full.
And you get full, or you pass out before you can kill yourself.
Yep.
So those people, we may use smelling salts for. Now, narcotic overdose, whole different thing. With a narcotic, we call them opioids, you call them narcotics. They stimulate a receptor called the mu opioid receptor. Now, there are other ones too. There's mu, kappa, delta, and lambda, but let's just talk about the mu opioid receptor. So the mu opioid receptor, when it is triggered, induces somnolence or sleepiness. It decreases your rate of breathing. It makes your pupils pinpoint, and it slows down your the bowels as well.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, or peristalsis in the GI tract. Now, if you get enough of it, it can make you comatose, and it can even stop you from breathing altogether.
Right.
So this is what Narcan is good for. Narcan is completely different. You spray it up somebody's nose, or you give them an injection of it, gets into their system, and it displaces the mu agonizing or this mu stimulating material like morphine or heroin or whatever, and displaces it off of the off of those receptors,
right.
And they wake up. I've seen this happen so fast. I could, so you walk into the emergency room. Mm. I heard this story. Let's just say I heard this somewhere. And there's someone has had a stroke, and you walk in, and the family's all around them saying, you know, Grandpa's leaving us. And was he like this when he came in? No, he was sitting up, but he must have had another stroke. Grandpa's leaving us. And you look at him, and this person is comatose, breathing maybe four times a minute, and they're actively dying. So you look at the chart, and you see they got 4 milligrams of morphine intravenous. And you also find out that they had a creatinine of 6. Now, for the people who don't know what that is, it's a measure of kidney function, and normal is 1.5 or less. And the higher you get, the more your kidneys are not functioning. So if you know a thing or two, you know that there is a metabolite. In other words, when drugs get in the body, they go through the liver, and the liver changes them. And we call those changed chemical compounds metabolites. And there's a metabolite of morphine called glucose-6-morphone, or morphine-6-glucuronide. It doesn't matter. It's the same thing. And it is only excreted by the kidney. And when the kidney isn't functioning, it's got nowhere to go, and it's active. It works it works on the body just like morphine does. So it accumulates. You can't get rid of it. So in a situation like that, you go and say, well, just hang on a second. And you go get an amp of Narcan, which is the stuff we're talking about that competitively inhibits the morphine at the level of the receptor, and you inject it. And 30 seconds later, that person sits up and goes, what are y'all doing here? Okay?
Right.
I changed that story enough so that there's no HIPAA situation. I made it hypothetical, but that's basically the gist of exactly what has happened multiple times. So that's the difference. Smelling salts are just a noxious stimuli, like slapping somebody in the face. Narcan actually has a chemical basis for its action, and it only works on opioid intoxication.
It kicks those little boogers right off. But here's a couple things, Dr. Steve, too. You know, we all love the movie Pulp Fiction. You don't have to jam Narcan into somebody's heart, number one.
Right. And they injected adrenaline into her heart.
Oh, was that what it was, adrenaline? Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense medically.
But that's a great story.
You use adrenaline. Right. We used to jam adrenaline in people's hearts when they had a cardiac arrest. And they had no IV access.
As a last step kind of thing.
So, and I haven't seen that done in ages.
And the other thing, too, and correct me if I'm wrong, please.
So if Tarantino had come to me, I would have said, let's use Narcan for this. Yeah. But it wouldn't have been as cool as jamming this thing in Uma Thurman's, you know, sternum.
Or sticking in her nose and squirting it in her nose. It wouldn't have been.
No.
It wouldn't have had the same effect.
No.
Hey, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Such
too.
A great scene,
it
but
was
it
great,
made, you know.
And
it doesn't even. It's so great, it doesn't even take me out of it.
No. It was great.
Knowing that it's bullshit.
Yeah. That was a great movie, by the way. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong too, but when you give someone Narcan, it displaces the opiates.
Right, temporarily.
Right? It's, in other words, they're not magically gone. They still need to go to the hospital and make sure that they're treated appropriately.
Give yourself a bill!
They will go back to where they were.
Thank you, Dr. Scott. I forgot to mention that. Yeah. You have to, if you give this to somebody, you immediately call 911, even if they seem fine.
Right.
If they have a long-acting opioid in their system, let's say that they took 12... extended release oxycodones known on, you know, in the market as OxyContin. Those are going to be in their system for quite
some
time.
Right.
Let's say I heard about another patient who injected themselves with 14 milligrams of Dilaudid. Okay, Dilaudid is a very potent opioid, and for someone that's not used to it, 14 milligrams is a lethal dose.
Yes.
You know, 1.5 milligrams of intravenous hydromorphone or Dilaudid is equivalent to 30 milligrams of oral morphine or 3 Lortab 10s. So that was the equivalent of just about 30 Lortab 10s, right? So we would give, in this case, you would give somebody Narcan, and they'd wake up for 15 minutes and go right back to sleep again. Give them another one, wake up, right back to sleep again, and stop breathing. So what you have to do in that situation is do a Narcan drip.
Right.
So you are actually giving them a constant dose of this stuff until the other drug is completely out of their system.
Right.
So there you go.
That's crazy.
All right. That's a great question. Good question.
Well, that is going to be it for this episode of Weird Medicine. Thank you for tuning in to my compilation of best of clips. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ovcharski, Eric Nagel, Roland Campos, Sam Roberts, Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Matt from the Syndicate, Ron Bennington, and Fez Watley, whose support of this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Sunday 5 p.m. Eastern, on demand another time to Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners, whose voicemails and topic ideas make this job very easy. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts and other crap. I also have a personal website, that's robotsintheocean.com, if you want to check that shit out. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise, and we'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.